Merry Christmas. Let me say this to everybody. I love saying it this time of year. The other day I walked into a store. If I hear, have a holly jolly Christmas or a happy holidays, I'm going to be like, seriously, come on. I mean, I'm like purposely like, Merry Christmas. Also, I wanted to congratulate all of you. Friday, you survived the end of the world. Congratulations. All right. Congratulations. Well, seriously, I wanted to be one of the first to congratulate you, let you know how excited I am for you. But it is good to have you here. My name's Todd, one of the pastors here. Excited that you're here. If it's your first time, if it's not your first time, I'm not sure yet if I'm excited. I mean, everybody's here. I love this time of year. I love Christmas. I don't love like the weird, gifty, commercialistic, weird side of it, but like, it's cool. My mom gets to come out here and get to watch my kids do just, kids do weird things at Christmas, don't they? They don't sleep a lot either. And so, but glad you're here. One of the things that we really do believe in, and Jared mentioned it, is that we believe the Bible contains within it the greatest message of all time. And it's the message that is all about this baby that we're going to be talking about for the next few days that was born in a manger, born to a 12 or 13-year-old virgin. Isn't that nutty? That God entrusted his son to barely a teenager. But yet in it, this the amazing story that who he became was the one who solved our greatest problem ever, which is our problem between us and God is sin. And so with it, just glad you're here today, glad that we're able to spend some time together. But what we're doing today, we've been as a church in the book of John, and we've been looking at who's Jesus. We really want to answer that question. I think it's one of the most important questions, if not the most important question we can ever answer, is who is Jesus? And so in studying the book of John, it's the final gospel that's put together, and it was put together by a guy who was towards the end of his life. It's about 60 or so years after Jesus had died on the cross. And it's a guy that realized that they were missing the point of who Jesus really was, that he couldn't have been just a man, that in order to absorb the wrath that was owed us, in order to solve this sin problem, he had to be fully God. And that was what was so important about the virgin birth. But he also had to be fully man because he had to be able to die. And John wanted to speak into the world at that time to make sure everybody understood that they were crystal clear that who this Jesus was and who he claimed to be. He wasn't just claiming to be anybody. He was claiming to be God in the flesh who came. And the idea was, it even says in John, is the tabernacle with us. And so that's where we've been. And so this past couple weeks, I've been looking through the book of John. I was in John 15 the other day, and a little phrase stuck out to me that I'm going to throw up on the screen. And it's not exactly where Jesus is going to go. I'm not going to go where he went with this, and so there's almost a danger in this. But it sent me off on a question when he said, if I didn't come. I was asking myself the question, can you imagine a world in which Jesus didn't come? What would that world look like if Jesus didn't come? Now, on one level, I was sitting there, and usually the person I am, I generally get comical first. And so I was sitting down thinking, okay, if Jesus didn't come, then this dude would have never come. Now, on one level, the reason I thought that was funny is if Jesus didn't come and this guy did hang around and all of a sudden here's this overweight, you know, guy in velvet red from the top to the bottom running around saying, ho, 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 can I hang out with your children? We'd be like, no, I don't think so, buddy. I was also thinking about like if Jesus didn't come, you ever thought about like why do we put Christmas trees in our house? Like if we didn't have Christmas and you walked into somebody's house and there was a dead tree in there all decorated, you'd be like, so what's up with the dead tree, bro? Like, you want to talk about this? But there were some good things. Like, let me show you this next picture. We wouldn't have Black Friday. You wouldn't have to buy that gift. You know that gift you cannot decide who to buy for that? What in the world do I buy for my father-in-law? But then I was also thinking about it from this standpoint. I would never, ever have to hear the song that I'm hearing over and over again, baby, it's cold outside. Every store I go into, it's that song. I swear, I went into the store the other day. Baby, it's cold outside. You know, I'm just like, seriously? Like, but it's just, there's this side of it. What if Jesus didn't come? But after I moved away from kind of the ridiculous and I moved into the actual, it hit me. Jesus Christ left an indelible mark on this planet. You cannot deny, I don't care who you are here, you cannot deny the indelible mark that Jesus Christ left on this planet. And I'm not the only one that thinks this way. Let me show you this one. guy named Napoleon Bonaparte, good general, crazy dude. But he said, I know men, and I tell you that Jesus Christ is no mere man. Between him and every other person in the world, there is no possible term of comparison. Alexander, Caesar, Charlemagne, and I have founded empires, but on what did we rest the creation of our genius? Force. Jesus Christ founded his empire upon love, and at this hour, millions of men would die for him. I marvel that whereas the ambitious dreams of myself, Caesar, and Alexander should have vanished into thin air, a Judean peasant, Jesus, should be able to stretch his hands across the centuries and control the destinies of men and nations. But not only a general, I found a smart guy, Albert Einstein. He wrote this. He said, I am a Jew, but I am enthralled by the luminous figure of the Nazarene. Jesus is too colossal for the pen of phrasemongers, however artful. No man can read the Gospels without feeling the actual presence of Jesus. His personality pulsates in every word. No myth is filled with such life. Theseus and the heroes of his type lack the authentic vitality of Jesus. But then the humanitarian, Mahatma Gandhi, he said this. He said, I was a man who was completely innocent. Or he was, not him. Go backwards. He, being Jesus, was a man who was completely innocent, offered himself as a sacrifice for the good of others, including his enemies, and became the ransom of the world. It was a perfect act. The historian, H.G. Wells, one of the most famous historians, said, look, I'm an historian, I'm not a believer, but I must confess as a historian that this penniless preacher from Nazareth is irrevocably the very center of history. Jesus Christ is easily the most dominant figure in all of history. A Christian historian wrote this, as the centuries pass, the evidence is accumulating that measured by his effect on history, Jesus is the most influential life ever lived on the planet. And then finally, the essayist and famous author, Sholem Ash, he said this, Jesus Christ is to me the outstanding personality of all time, all history, both as Son of God and Son of Man. Everything he ever said or did has value for us today, and that is something you can say of no other man, dead or alive. There's no easy middle ground to stroll upon. You either accept Jesus or you reject him. It is powerful as you sit down and read what other people have thought about Jesus. And as I was sitting there reading it, some of the thoughts that came to my head that kind of blow me away is here's this dude, if you think about it for a second. He was a guy born 2,000 years ago to peasants. He was born to two teenage parents in the middle of kind of the far-off empire at that time of Rome. And that's the Christmas story. But the part that kind of the rest of the story that comes along with it is this guy lived then for another 30 years. He lived a pretty quiet life, a pretty hidden life. We know he was a carpenter for all of that particular time. But all of a sudden, at one point in history, he started his ministry and he turned the world upside down. No one, I think, in here, and I think anybody in the world can deny what Jesus Christ accomplished is absolutely mind-boggling. What he did to affect the world was amazing, but here's the deal. It wasn't only what he did. I think sometimes we sit down and we think, oh my gosh, here's this man in whom more songs have been sung about him and more books have been written about him and more art has been commissioned to commemorate him than anyone else in the world. But the mark of Jesus, if you think about it, wasn't just this mark that he left on this cosmic globe, but how he changed a few key people that changed the world. See, Jesus does do his work on this gigantic scale, but never forget, Jesus Christ also does his work deep within us personally, so much so that anybody that's ever been impacted by Jesus in a real way follows him down these footpaths that Jesus started 2,000 years ago. And if you think about it for just a second, all the things that Jesus influenced, I think it really would blow your mind. Like take, for example, arts and literature and also music. As you sit back and think about the great artists and the great music and the great literature of our time, you run into names like, for example, guys like Raphael, Maybe even guys that you know more about, like Michelangelo, Leonardo da Vinci. Can you imagine this world without their art? Can you imagine this world without the movement of how the church commissioned guys like Mozart and Beethoven, guys like Handel and guys like Haydn to write some of the most incredible music of all time? Some of the authors, Dante, Milton, Tolstoy. One of my favorites growing up is Hans Christian Andersen, Dickens, T.S. Eliot, or kind of one of my favorites now, a guy named C.S. Lewis that God used to do incredible things in putting out to the world who Jesus Christ was. In fact, I think one of the biggest things missing in the church today is just this way in which the arts was used by the church over time to totally impact the world. When you talk about literature, don't forget this, is that not only was it about literature, but it was about people having the capacity to read. It's what I said earlier. The Bible is put into language. God communicated this to us over about 1,500 years through men, and he wrote it down, everything that we need to know. And so God's people have always been passionate that people would be able to read for themselves and understand who Jesus is out of these words that God handed down throughout time. And so Christians have always been passionate. Just like at Jesus' time, only those that were generally wealthy or only those that had power or privilege within society could go to schools. But Christians always did, learning from Jesus, going to even those, not only the rich, but also to the poor and those that don't have much, to make sure that they're able to read the Bible in their own language. That's why we do what we do all around the world here at Cornerstone, is we want the greatest message to get out there. But what this led to, which is so key, our educational system that we now enjoy today came about because when Christians saw the need, they began to educate people. For the first 200 years of this nation, based upon kind of what they learned as they came out of Europe, when they came over to the United States, the Pilgrims, the Puritans, all these different people began to start schools. And for 200 years, all schools were Christian. And it even moved into higher education. It moved so much so into higher education that pretty soon universities sprung up. Harvard, the first school ever, university ever started in the United States. Did you know who started Harvard? A donation from a pastor. Dartmouth. Dartmouth was started to train missionaries. Yale, this is the one that caught me. I didn't know this one. I knew they trained pastors, but their other passion was to train politicians. Talk about an interesting school. Brown, Rutgers, NYU, William and Mary. All these schools influenced in some way by Jesus Christ. And because of it then, you can even see how it affected science. From about the middle of the 13th century up till about the beginning of the 19th century, you see in it that scientists, everything about what they wrote, everything about what they did, all revolved around this idea that there truly is a God, a rational living God who's created rational human beings that are to join him in what he's doing. And all the way back in Genesis 1, he says, I want you to rule over and subdue the earth. And that's what these scientists set out to do. Okay, God, if you're rational and you've created us rational, then we're going to join you in what you're doing on this planet. Kind of the irony of this whole thing, though, is how our education system has moved from what once taught the life and teaching of Jesus to now they don't want anything to do with it. But from education, as it sprung up in this country, probably the thing that affects us most today is the fact that this country was founded upon this educational system that trained up these men, and the lenses whereby which these men looked was oftentimes through the scriptures. Now, I'm not trying to say these men were all Christian. Not all of them were Christian. I'm also not trying to say that these men, by any stretch of the imagination, always did everything perfect. But at the end of the day, the whole idea of this concept of life and liberty, of rights that are given to us by a creator, all came because these men were looking through the lenses of scripture. They were impacted by who God was. Oftentimes, we'll get to slavery at this point when, you know, somebody will say, yeah, but these guys, you know, and the whole three-fifths thing and the Constitution. Like I said, not everything was done was perfect, but never forget this. And this is the part that's often overlooked. The only people fighting slavery, abolitionists during the 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th centuries were Christians. But it wasn't just the United States of America. It also moved into, and you see this and how it happened, it affected our health system. Early on, when Jesus Christ was doing his ministry, he would go amongst the poor, the needy, the elderly. He would heal. He would come alongside, and he would literally touch the people that no one else wanted to touch. And from that then sprang a movement of people that saw how Jesus did what he did. And everywhere they went, that's how they treated people. They weren't just caring alone about the rich and the affluent. It's not that they were afraid of them, but no one else wanted to go to the poor and the needy and the elderly. So these Christians, looking at Jesus, went that way. In fact, in 325 AD, there's this council called the Council of Nicaea, which it was all about mainly in the idea of who's Jesus and him being fully God and fully man. But one thing overlooked about the Council of Nicaea is they actually commissioned and decreed that everywhere a cathedral was, they were to build what later became known as hospitals. In fact, the very first hospital started in the United States in Philadelphia was started by who? Christians. That's not even mentioning Salvation Army. That's not even mentioning the Red Cross. But everything about Christians is that we do truly care about the poor and the needy, those that aren't cared for, which leads to this idea of caring for the poor and needy. At Jesus' time, one group of people that was drastically overlooked in that culture was women. In fact, women in his particular culture that he came up in, and by the way, not just his culture, but even today, he came in and reminded a culture that God not only created men in his image, but in Genesis 1, God created man and woman in his image. In fact, his closest and dearest friends and followers were women. And he even had the audacity to go and train and educate these women, which at that time would have been absolutely unheard of. But from that moment, everywhere the gospel has gone, even into these places that are the darkest, most remote places on the earth, where women are looked down upon and demeaned, the gospel comes in and elevates women to the proper place as co-heirs, it says, of the grace of life. And one that I'm passionate about, kids. Ever seen or just thought through what it was like with Jesus around kids? And there's some of the most beautiful pictures, you know, and some of them I get, they're fake, but man, I look down at them and it's like, no. Jesus was a single dude. When do you ever put single dude and kids together besides the Pied Piper? It's this idea in which literally when he would come into towns, kids would come flocking to him. They wanted to be around him. In fact, one of the most memorable things said inside of the Bible is when the guys that he's with are keeping the kids away from him, and he said, fellas, let the kids come to me. And he started something inside of the New Testament church which was amazing. They gained Jesus' heart for these kids. And so while in that culture, kids were to be mainly seen and not heard, and even at some points, those that were born with a defect or a learning disability or anything else, even sometimes just because they were born female, they would take these kids and they would just expose them to the elements, and the church would come along and say, no, every one of those kids, I don't care how God has created them, they're created uniquely in his image, and they would love those kids, bring them in, and make them a part of Christian families and homes at that particular time. And for 2,000 years, what's the church been doing? The same exact thing. The orphanages that sprung up in the Middle Ages, all the way including into the 19th century, when you had men like George Whitefield and George Mueller, even guys like C.H. Spurgeon that fought for these kids, that even went into the most terrible situations where they were having child labor, and Christians fought so that these particular kids didn't work in those conditions. And even to this day, the church is still passionate about kids, even to the point where we care for not only the unborn, but around the world, there's human trafficking happening, and the one group that's diving into it the hardest is Christians. That's what's so key about this. When Jesus Christ came, what kind of a mark did he leave? He left a mark that's still here today. In fact, coming up here in about 24 hours, billions of people will celebrate his birth. So that's what's so amazing about that little manger. You have to decide what you're going to do with Jesus. But I want you to understand something so clear here today about Jesus. I didn't even talk about business, I didn't even talk about sports. I didn't even talk about the poor. I didn't talk about all those things that he influenced incredibly. But he not only wants to do things on a cosmic level, he's not just some good teacher. He's not just some nice moral guy that's here to do fix-it-up church things on the planet. The means by which he does it is by fixing people. See, C.S. Lewis, that guy I was telling you about earlier, this is one of his big things. He said, a man who was merely a man and said the sort of things that Jesus said would not be a great moral teacher. He would either be a lunatic on the level of a man who says he's a poached egg. I laugh every time I see that. Or else he would be the devil of hell. You must make your choice. Either this man was and is the Son of God, or else a madman or something else. You can shut him up for a fool, you can spit at him and kill him as a demon, or you can fall at his feet and call him Lord and God. But let us not come with any patronizing nonsense about his being a great human teacher. He has not left that open to us. He did not intend to. See, God doesn't want to just do these fix-it-up projects here. He wants to do a work in our lives. See, this is where it gets personal. I grew up in a great family. I grew up under great privilege. I grew up hearing the gospel preached to me. I knew all the stories. I could recite the stories. I could even walk through if you asked me. I understood that he was virgin born. I understood he lived a perfect life. I understood that he died, that he was buried, that he rose again, that he's now at the right hand of the Father. I understood that he is a holy and eternal God, and that by my sin, me totally rebelling against him, just like all of you have done, I deserved a holy and eternal punishment. I knew that. I knew I could cry out to him, and I knew that he loved me and he cared for me. I knew all kinds of facts that is important for us to understand, but at the end of the day, God doesn't care about facts. He cares about whether or not those facts change me. See, he wants to do a fix-it-up project in our lives, and I'm here to tell you, as one that's experienced God, not only on the cosmic global level, but he changed me. And I can look around this room and see so many other people that this Jesus who was born 2,000 years ago that has impacted almost every facet of life, and we're so thankful that he has, but I look around and I see people that even Jesus, not only is he a cosmic God, but he's very personal, and he's come into each and every one of your lives that know him, and he's changed you and made you different. That's what's so amazing about Jesus. That's what's so amazing about that little one that's sitting there in the manger that nobody had a clue about, that now we know is that he came to solve our biggest problem, and that is that we had all rebelled against God, the world was in chaos, and he is here to uniquely do not only a fix-it or a project on a huge level, but in your life. Now, the beauty of it is that he's not asking us to be good moral people. He's wanting us to submit to him. And to come to him and surrender and say, I can't, but you can. And when we come to him, the beauty is that he says, I will fix you up. And so I don't know where everybody's here today. I don't have a clue. I look around this room and I see a bunch of Christians. And I would just say to you, Christians, be blown away by Jesus over the next few days. Next time you see a nativity scene, just silently, so people don't think you're weird. And then go in your car and go, whoa! Just be excited. Man, we're right with God. He's coming back one day. And so with it, be excited about it. But also, listen to me closely. Join in the lineage of the last 2,000 years that Jesus started. Dive in. I look around this room and I see all kinds of people in all kinds of different things. I see people that work in government. I see people that work in business. I see all you different people. God is asking you to join him there because he doesn't want to just transform your life. He wants to transform the way you place your work. He wants to transform your neighborhood. He wants to transform your sports teams. He wants to transform all kinds of things. That's the kind of God that he is. Join him this year. To those of you that don't know Jesus, that aren't followers of his, today follow him. Surrender. He's calling you and asking you to surrender and follow him with everything that you are. Quit fighting this world. Quit trying to deny him. See, this is what I'm talking about. Jesus Christ, that one born in a manger, puts you right at a fork in the road. And just like C.S. Lewis said, you have to decide what you're going to do with him. And the little verse that I love, John 3:16, that I got to teach on a few weeks ago, just says this. Now, those of you that are Christians, don't you dare check out. This is an amazing verse. I'll chase you down. I'll haunt you. For God so loved the world. And he keeps loving it. His believers all over the planet are continuing to continue on and on loving this world. That he gave his one and only son. That he knew that was the only means of satisfying this problem. That whoever, look at this, believes in him. Whoever finally comes to the point and realizes not just believing the facts, not just believing the information, but finally belief to the point where there's action saying, I'm done, I'm not going to fight anymore. Will not perish, will not face his wrath for eternity. That's the only way we as humans can ever pay this price, is to face this wrath for eternity. And instead, we'll have eternal. So if you don't know him today, what better day to come to him? Are you kidding me? When if somebody looks at you and says, when did you come to know Jesus? You can say, oh, Christmas 2012. What a better day to come to know Jesus Christ. And so if you don't know him today and you'd like to know how you can come into a relationship with him, how you can follow him, we'd love to talk with you up here at this room. Or maybe somebody of you need to get baptized. We've had some of the coolest baptisms over yesterday and today. Man, yesterday I called for baptism. I didn't think anybody was going to come. And I didn't realize it was because there was a lady on her walker trying to get up here to get baptized. I'm like, really? Anybody? Anybody? You know? She's like, hold on, little, you know? And so she gets up here, you know, and I'm looking at her. And I, you know, I'm always the type of person, are you sure you want to get baptized? You know, and I'm looking at her and I said, are you trusting in Christ alone for your salvation? She gave me that sunny look, you know, like, boy. And she goes, listen, I love Jesus and I want to follow him even though I'm over 90 years old. I was like, and she was a lady that got baptized as an infant. She grew up Catholic and she says, I don't want my parents' baptism. I want the baptism in which I choose because I'm following Jesus Christ. And we couldn't put her in the tub, but we backed her up against here and we poured water on her head as a means of doing that. This morning, a young guy that got baptized, that his uncle slash dad in a lot of ways led him to the Lord. It was a powerful time. Is what better thing to say, I got baptized at Christmas time? And maybe some of you just need prayer right now because you're missing the Jesus I'm talking about. This Jesus that not only changes the world, but changes you personally. And the last thing I want to say to you, I've been waiting to say this all service. Merry Christmas. Amen. So if you could, let's stand up. I'm going to pray. And this song we're about to sing, I love. I won't tell you which one. But just quietly enjoy singing this song. Father, thank you so much for Jesus. Thank you for sending him to solve the world's greatest problem. Father, I do pray for those that don't know you that today they would see Jesus past the moral teacher and truly see him as the one who came to right all and to bring people to himself, and that they would join you in what you're doing, Father, please. God, I pray for the Christians in here, Father, would this Christmas truly be merry? God, protect us from unmerry Christmas. God, remind us of who we are as your kid. And Father, this year's Cornerstone moves forward. Would you empower us through your Spirit to join you in what you're doing on this planet, please? And God, at the end of it, thank you. In your precious name we pray. Amen.